Thidwick the Big-Hearted Moose. Up at Lake Winnebago, the far northern shore, lives a huge herd of moose, about 60 or more. And they all go around in a big happy bunch, looking for nice tender moose moss to munch. For the moose moss that day was especially fine, when it happened that Thidwick, the last moose in line, saw a bingle bug sitting. The bug called out, "Hey, it's such a long road and it's such a hot day. Would you mind if I rode on your horns for a way?" "Of course not," smiled Thidwick, the big-hearted moose. "I'm happy my antlers can be of some use." So the bingle bug picked out a nice, easy seat, and the moose went on looking for moose moss to eat. An hour or so later, the bug heard a squeak, and he heard the small voice of a tree spider speak. "I say," said the spider, "you've got a fine place. That moose seems quite friendly, has such a nice face. If I got on too, do you think he would mind?" "Hop aboard," laughed the bug, "and I think that you'll find that the moose won't object. He's the big-hearted kind." And the very next thing the poor animal knew, a bobcat and turtle were living there too. What was the big-hearted moose going to do? A host has to put up with all kinds of pests, for a host above all must be nice to his guests. They asked in a fox, who jumped in from the trees. They asked in some mice, and they asked in some fleas. They asked a big bear in, and then, if you please, came a swarm of 362 bees. Poor Thidwick sank down with a groan to his knees, and then came something that made his heart freeze. Bullets came zigging right past Thidwick's face. Guns were bang-binging all over the place. Thidwick took to his heels with that load on his head. With 500 pounds on his horns, the moose fled. He could have run faster without all those pests, but a host, above all, must be nice to his guests. Up canyon, off cliff, over wild rocky trail, with bullets bouncing all around him like hail. Then finally they had him. He gasped. He felt faint, and the whole world grew fuzzy. Thidwick was finished completely. Or was he? Finished? Not Thidwick. Decidedly not. It's true he was in a most terrible spot, but now he remembered a thing he'd forgot. A wonderful something that happens each year to the horns of all moose and the horns of all deer. Today was the day Thidwick happened to know that old horns come off so that new ones can grow. His old horns today are where you knew they would be. His guests are still on them, all stuffed as they should be.
Well, there you have it. Welcome to 12 Stone Week 5 of Parenting Through Proverbs, from King Solomon to Dr. Seuss, and the book today, Thidwick, the Big-Hearted Moose. Well, there is great tension in the parenting process when your kids finally transition past high school, when they move from post high school into the adult world, because everything has been based on this parent-child relationship, and they're no longer children. They're no longer teenagers. They're now adults. And of course, those of our adults, of us who are adults, we have this relationship with our own parents, but navigating it as a parent with a now grown-up child has all kinds of tension. What should that relationship look like? Well, there's all sorts of extremes, I suppose. Like the one I grew up with. My parents divorced roughly when I was about 12 years old. When I hit 18 years old, for all practical purposes, Dad was done with me. I mean, it was obvious I was on my own. Dad wasn't going to help, and he never did. Then there's the other extreme. Our culture calls it failure to launch. That's where this movement of 20-somethings moving back into the home. And people write about that and say, well, the reason for that is because of the college kind of debt load and economics or the unstable job market. And so it's for economic reasons. Others write and say, no, it's really because that generation is failing to take full responsibility for their own emotional development or their own financial life or their own career. And on the discussion goes. And then there's the other extreme. And that is the parent that just won't let go, who needs to keep parenting like you're a child. And so they dominate or they intrude or they enable. And that's how you end up with the old school, kind of the proverbial, you know, in-law jokes. So I thought it was appropriate to bring a couple of them with a little bit of the boom boom at the end. Here we go. Adam and Eve were the happiest and the luckiest couple in the world because neither of them had in-laws. There you go. Boom boom. What is the difference between outlaws and in-laws? Outlaws are wanted. Yeah, I know. Boom boom. Okay, here we go. A man, his wife, and his mother-in-law went on vacation to the Holy Land. While they were there, the mother-in-law passed away. The undertaker told him, you can have her shipped home for $5,000, or you can bury her here in the Holy Land for $150. The man thought about it and then told him, I think we're just going to have her shipped home. And the undertaker asked, now, why would you spend $5,000 to ship your mother-in-law home when it would be wonderful to have her buried here in the Holy Land for only $150? The man replied, a man died here 2,000 years ago. He was buried here, and 3 days later, he rose from the dead. I just can't take that chance. I'm sorry. I just can't take that chance. Oh, that's a spectacular line. So what is the relationship supposed to look like? How do you parent when your kids become grown up? This new grown-up relationship. Well, let's tackle it by looking back on where we've been in the series and where we need to go. Look on the screen here. Here's where we've laid it out in the whole age groups, 1 to 5, 6 to 11, 12 to 18, 18 on up. And we said, in the ages of 1 to 5, this is really discipline years. That's predominant. And then ages 6 to 11, that's more the training kind of years. And then coaching through the teen years. And we left off with that last weekend. You might want to go get in on that teaching if you missed it. Today, 18 and up. And what is our role as parents? And I want to talk us through, and I just want to make it clear. When my kids hit 18, post-high school, my conversation with them is very crisp and clear. You are now your own person. I'm not your disciplinarian. I'm not your trainer. I'm not training you any longer. I'm not even coaching you, really. It's your life. It's yours to live. Your decisions, and you will live with them. What I would love to do is be your friend, and I'd love to advise you. I would love to be chosen as one of your advisors, because I think I can help you navigate into your career, into your marriage, and win in life. I'd love to set you up to win. But, you have to be willing to receive the advice. And so I make a deal. I wrote it out so I can read it to you so you can hear the complete deal. And I want it to be crisp and clear, so I'm just going to read a little bit of it. I make this deal with all my kids when they make the transition. Here's the deal. If you want to go to college, then you have to pick a career, not a hobby. Because college is not 4 more years of high school. It's 4 years of career prep. It's not a party. It's work. It's not first about your passion. It's first about your gifting. Because we're not spending real money unless there's a real career on the other side of this degree. You have to work through college. And if you agree to this deal, then I will continue to be your provider. And I will be incredibly generous, do all that I can to help you get through. However, you carry the weight of this. And if you remain under my roof, then we're going to negotiate a new deal for the new rules. But if you want to be completely life independent, then you will need to be completely financially independent. You can't live in my antlers and pretend you're on your own. And that's the deal. Thank you for the support over here. A dad who's like, I hope they're listening. You ever do that? You're just like in a service. Are you listening to him? I'll get you a CD. So far, our first three kids of our four children, our first three have taken that deal. Josh, who's 27, been married for 5 years. Julissa, who's 26, been married for 3 years. And then Jake, our 21-year-old, who just finished his third year of college. All three of them have taken that deal specifically. Our fourth, Jaden, who's 12 years old, is hoping that the deal changes by the time he gets there. And that dad will be so old when he graduates that he'll just take over everything daddy owns and he'll just assume responsibility and it'll be all his. At least that's the family joke. So as a parent of grown-up kids, I still want to be, as we left off last week, their major encourager. I still believe in them. But it's now their life. And so I've said there are two things that I hope my kids will choose. I hope they'll choose for me to be one of their grown-up friends. I really do. And I hope that they'll choose to let me be one of their advisors. But whether they do or not, I give them this advice. As you move into adulthood and responsibility for your own life, wise people seek advice. I'm telling you, as you step out on your own, seek advice. Be teachable. This is the time to be the most teachable you've ever been. Because being teachable, which is perhaps one of the most difficult things to become as you move into your own independence, being teachable is wise in a world of fools. I think that's what Solomon was trying to tell us. I think that's what God was inspiring through Solomon. Look on the screen, grab your teaching notes. Here's your fill in the blank. So right there on the back of your bulletin, flip over your bulletin. Here's your teaching notes. The pen's right underneath the chair. Pull out the pen, jot it down, fill in these blanks. Solomon's advice from Proverbs chapter 12, verse 15. This is the main thought I want to bring to my kids as they transition into adulthood. Fools are headstrong and do what they like. Wise people take advice. Let's fill in the blanks together loud and proud. Fools are what, everybody? Yeah, fools are headstrong. That means they're obstinate, they're willful. Fools are headstrong and do what? What they like. Wise people do what? Take what? They take advice. Wise people seek advice and take advice. At the beginning of the new year, we launched the Double Dog Dare series. Pastor Mark was just talking about it. And we offered advice for you. Advice for winning in marriage, advice for winning in career, advice for winning in finances, advice for winning in your emotional development, in your core, advice for being physically fit. I mean, we were offering great advice and challenged you to take a dare. Now, I joined one of those dares, which was to get more physically fit. What I didn't talk about at the time is that I was already on a journey. Now 18 months, but I was 15 months into the journey. Because 18 months ago from now, I sat down with my doctor, had a full physical, and he offered advice. 18 months ago, he said, Kevin, you need to seriously begin to make progressive shifts in your lifestyle habits to get healthy. And I'm giving you serious doctor's advice. So I was already on that track. So that when we hit the double dog dare, I was just taking the next level of this effort. And I was adding more lifts and 10,000 steps. And I wasn't really going for a diet as much as I was just a change. Now, I know that it's popular these days for people to post their before and after pictures. Kind of like Chris Pratt. You've seen it online. Chris Pratt puts out, there's his before and there's his after pictures. You know, we did Galaxy movie. And that's pretty spectacular. And so I thought maybe I should do the same. So from 18 months ago, here is my before and after picks. Pay no attention to a similarity to Chris Pratt's pick. No, they did not just post my picture on his body. Man, I didn't look that good when I married Marcia and I looked good. All right, more seriously. Last 18 months, Doc said, I got some advice for you. Make some better decisions. And so 18 months ago, I weighed 192 pounds. 2 days ago, I met the doctor again. I weigh 172 pounds. Just a 20-pound drop. More importantly was the shift. It was to try and progressively move some fat to muscle. So I've moved that needle about 10%, dropping body fat by 10%, and I've still got 4 points to go. More importantly, I dropped my heart rate from 122 to 102, shifted cholesterol into healthier places. And do you know what the doctor said 2 days ago? Listen, keep doing what you're doing so that you can progress in what you've already accomplished. Keep doing. Do you know what? That's just good advice. Now, we all know this. See, we're going to get done with Double Dog Dare right now, and you get done with changes that need to happen in your marriage for it to strengthen. You get done with things you need to do in the life of your career, and you immediately know if you don't keep doing those, whatever you gained, you'll lose. See, I know if I don't keep doing, see, that's why I wasn't going on a diet. For the 18 months, I've not been dieting. What I've been doing is making lifestyle changes in decisions and habits that I know I can carry on as a lifestyle. When we talk about breakthroughs in faith and breakthroughs in finances, the things God has called you to, if you quit doing them because you're 3 months after Double Dog Dare, you will go back to the same fatness you had in whatever area of life we're talking about. See, why? Wise people take good advice. When I sit down with my emerging, growing adult children, the goal is to help them take good advice. That's what wise people do. Now listen, if you're in that age group, if you'll let me just for a moment take kind of a father's heart, pastor's heart for you. I'm talking to everybody, but I want you particularly to listen. If you're in that post-high school, 20s, college, anywhere in that decade, I'm going to tell you, the greatest temptation when you gain new independence is to use that independence to do what you want instead of do what's wise. Listen. That is the greatest temptation. I tell my kids, you are now emerging into great independence, and your deep temptation is to start doing what you want. Now I'm on my own. I get to do what I want. Isn't that what we say? Soon as you get freedom, what do you say? Now I get to do what I want instead of what's wise. And that's why Solomon calls those people fools. That's what a fool is. The moment a fool gets more freedom, the moment a fool gets more independence, the first thing they do is start doing what they want instead of what's wise. That's how you know they're the fool. He's saying you because you're not learning from those who are ahead of you. You're not learning from those who've already figured out what's wise and foolish. You're not listening to your Father in heaven who gives you all wisdom for the best of life. You are now forfeiting the best life. In fact, Jesus talks about that. He came from heaven to earth, embodied human flesh, to have a conversation with us about how you get life and life to the full. And when he did, he told us a story in Matthew chapter 7. And here he's in essence saying, make God your lead advisor. Have no other advisors before him. When the world tells you something, sift it through the wisdom of God, and if it's not consistent, toss it aside, because only God's wisdom ultimately wins. Matthew chapter 7, take your Bibles across the campuses. If you don't have a Bible with you, it's right underneath your chair. Reach under your chair, grab a Bible. We're going to turn in the Worship Center Bible over to page 972, Matthew chapter 7. If you're on a mobile device, it's Matthew 7, verse 24. If you're in your own Bible, Matthew 7, 24, Worship Center Bible, page 972. Now, Jesus is trying to help us understand the weight of being wise versus being a fool. And on page 972, chapter 7, verse 24 of Matthew, he gives us, if you will, the full weight of this subject. Verse 24, therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice is like a wise man. There you go.
wise man, wise woman, wise person, who built his house on the rock. The rain came down, the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against that house, yet it did not fall because it had its foundations on the rock. It built its life on something stable. When you build your life on the truth of God, the wisdom of God, the will of God, and the way of God, you are going to win when the pressure and the crisis and the complexity of life falls on your marriage, your family, your finances, your career, your character. You will win. However, verse 26, but everyone who hears these words of mine and does not put them into practice is like a foolish man. There you go, foolish man, foolish woman, foolish person who built his house on sand. The rain came down, the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against that house, and it fell with a great crash. Why? Because fools always take the easy way. Always. Easiest thing to do is build on sand. See, all the foundational work of building on rock is so difficult to get it set in the rock. You spend most of your money, most of your time just getting a foundation in play. And fools want it fast and easy. And as soon as the storms come, it all falls apart. And listen, the only one who's surprised is the fool. The wise people saw it coming miles away. They knew whose life would fall, most likely, and whose would not. And so now let's get to the more practical. Let's get in to the susical thoughts of Thidwick, the big-hearted moose. Now, big-hearted moose, I'm going to call him the good-hearted moose because that's how the story plays out. That's what it means by big-hearted. He was just good-hearted. And I think there's a couple lessons we can learn from Thidwick that are consistent with what Solomon has taught us and really what I want to help my kids understand. When my kids move from post-high school into adulthood to key lessons, good-hearted lessons for grown-ups. Here's the first one. The fallacy of easy seat. The fallacy of easy what? Seat. S-E-A-T. Jot it down. It's on the screen. The fallacy, everybody say it with me, of what? Easy seat. Oh, my goodness. Huge fallacy. See, we've already said that the temptation is to be headstrong. When you get independence, the temptation is to do what you want instead of what is wise. And that makes you blind to the coin. Yes, I literally mean I'm talking about a coin. So here you go. I have a coin in my hand. And this is simple but profound, so go with me on this, okay? Every coin has how many sides? It's not a trick question. Just tell your neighbor. Every coin has how many sides? Tell your neighbor right now. How many sides does every coin have? Just tell him. Tell him. Don't be obstinate. Don't be headstrong. Tell him. All right. The answer is what? Two. We all know this. Meaning that a real coin, a whole coin, has two sides. It doesn't have one side. It has two sides. And that is true about life. The wise know that in all of life, there's always the two sides. There is the blessing, but it's never just the one side, the blessing. There is the blessing side, but there's also the burden side. There is the payoff side, but there's always the price side. There is no picnic without ants. There is no credit card purchase without credit card payments. There is no lasting romance without selflessly serving. There is no joy of a baby without poopy diapers. There is no fresh garden without fighting the weeds. There is no life in God without death to yourself. There is no freedom without responsibility. And the essence of a fool picks only one side. A fool starts living like the coin is one-sided. Like, I can just take the blessing and not have to worry about it. They start thinking, you know what? All I have to do is just pick the one side of the coin and life's good. I should be able to have a picnic without ants. What they pick is what the bingo bug did in the Thidwick story. He asked for easy seat on the horns of Thidwick and then thought it should become Easy Street. And that's a fool. Let's go back to the story. You've already heard it, but I will just remind us what we read at the beginning. When it happened that Thidwick, the last moose in line, saw a bingo bug sitting, the bug called out, "Hey, it's such a long road, and it's such a hot day. Would you mind if I rode on your horns for a way?" And the bingo bug turned a while into a lifestyle, turned an easy seat into easy street. And it's no wonder he ended up stuffed in the end, because that happens to everybody who thinks that somehow on the one-sided coin, you should be able to get an easy street life. That's why when you come to the end of the story, Seuss so smiley and wisely delivered, "His old horns today are where you knew they would be. His guests are still on them, all stuffed as they should be." That's no surprise to anyone. See, what fools do is they pick one side of the coin. So I could reread this list that we've gone through. And what the fool says is there should be a blessing life without a burden. There should be a payoff without a price. There should be a picnic without ants. There should be a credit card purchase without me having to have credit card payments. I should have a lasting romance without having to selflessly serve. I should be able to have the joy of a baby without poopy diapers. I should be able to have a fresh garden without having to fight weeds. I should have life in God without having to die to myself. I should have great freedom without responsibility. It's a delusion. It's a fallacy. It's a lie. But when you buy it and you start chasing it, you become the bingo bug. And you ensure that eventually you're going to be on the wall stuffed. That's what Jesus was talking about. Fool. Fools' lives crash, and the only one that's surprised is the one whose life crashed. Everybody else who's wise can see the fool making fool's decisions. And the bingo bug feels like a victim, but the bingo bug is only a victim of themselves, not of the world around them, not of the pressure. Everybody's life has pressure. It's just that some build on solid principles that stand, and some build on unstable principles that will fall. So when I say I want to teach my kids as they move into their adult life the fallacy of easy seat and easy street, it's because the world says it's okay to be headstrong and obstinate and willful against God. Don't worry about it. It's no big deal. But the reality is their life will eventually fall under pressure. And since we are all vulnerable to wanting our own way, listen, because we're all vulnerable to wanting our own way, you need to seek advice. Here's why. The purpose of advice is to think things through so you can see both sides of the coin. That is the purpose of advice. When my kids come to me and ask for advice, what I am doing with them is listening to them. I'm not first giving advice. The first thing I do is ask them questions. Tell me what you see. Tell me what you think. Tell me what you would do. And what I'm listening for is, can they see both sides of the coin? And if they can't, then I'm going to help them see the other side of the coin. Because if you start thinking that it's all blessing and there's no burden, if you think your marriage is going to work without selflessly sacrificing, if you think you're going to take a financial risk and somebody else is going to pay it off, you are out of your ever-loving mind. I just want to help you see both sides so that when you make a decision, you know the decision you're making. So I'll give you some examples in our family of the conversations that I have with my kids when they make the transition. I don't know that it's helpful, but I'll certainly help you hear a little or share with you a little bit of what I try to do to help them break from the fallacy of easy seat. Now, I give my kids advice only when they ask. So if they ask, and we talk about things like finances, which is one of the heavy subjects, I don't make their financial decisions. You turn 18, I do not make your financial decisions. and you don't make mine, and my money is not your money. So, here are some of the things. One of the pieces of advice I give them, until you have a stable career income, no car debt. Drive what you can cash, and you can only afford what you can cash. Do not get in car debt. It's a foolish decision in the early stages of your life. There are more important things. You don't need a cool car. You just need to get somewhere. Another one, college debt is an easy seat fallacy. College debt is an easy seat fallacy. You think that when you're in college, this is going to be easy to pay off down the road. That's an absolute lie. It will crush you. I know. Marcia and I did it. We went $20,000 in debt. We graduated college, got married, had $20,000 in debt between us. That's equal to $46,000 in debt today. That's the impact of it. It was crushing. And one of the things happening in our culture is the idea that as soon as you figure out you're a fool, somebody else ought to relieve your pressure. I mean, that's nuts. This is going on in our nation. I received a Time magazine cover, whole magazine, with my name on it uniquely. Check it out on the screen. This came in my mailbox. I am a Time magazine subscriber, and the way it came is just like that. I didn't print that. It had my name on it. They did 22.5 million unique mail outs. And it says, Kevin Myers, you owe $42,998.12. That's disconcerting. And this follow-up, that's what every American man, woman, and child would need to pay to erase the $13.9 trillion U.S. debt. And that's not including the $6 trillion that we've borrowed against ourselves. And somebody thinks that this is going to go away. The people who think that you can get up in the antlers and this is somehow going to go away and somebody's going to turn this into Easy Street are deluded. It's a fallacy. There is a burden on us. And when you live in a nation who concludes that you don't have to do what's wise, you can only do what you want, and that transfers into a culture that there is an easy seat that leads to Easy Street, we are out of our minds. There is a responsibility for that, and it's going to land on all of us. And some point, that kind of nation ends up stuffed on the wall. This stuff is at risk for us. I'm not telling you anything you don't know. We all know this. I'm saying that I have to help my kids because, listen, everyone cannot live in the antlers. Without the moose slowing down and everybody losing. So I have conversations with my kids. So I say, whatever debt you take between two and your now married spouse, pay it off first. College debt is your number one priority. You do everything you can when you get it. You don't buy a house, you don't buy a car, you don't buy toys, you don't buy tech toys, you don't buy anything. You go pay off your college debt because it has no asset base to it and you are in trouble and under pressure. Go get it done. And if you do buy a house eventually and you're still under college debt, you take the loan you would have taken, subtract the college debt number, and you buy less house and get inside your margins because that is a real debt and you owe it. And by the way, I tell my kids when they come for advice, if you come to me for advice after you've been stupid, I'm not here to bail you out. What I will tell you is this, then press through the pain of regret until you pay it off and learn your own lesson. I've had to learn mine. Look on the screen. Here's a great quote. There are two types of pain in this world. The short-term pain of discipline and the long-term pain of regret. Discipline weighs ounces, regret weighs tons. In essence, choose your pain. I would prefer that my kids come to me ahead of time so that I can offer advice and then they can go make their own financial decision. In fact, frankly, I'm more generous to my kids when they're wise than when they're foolish because I want to help them get somewhere, and wise people are going to get somewhere. And just so it's clear, the point of raising kids to grown up is to get them out of my antlers. Number two, friendships need fences to flourish. Jot it down. Friendships need fences to flourish. Now, I hope that my kids choose me to be their friend. I hope they choose me to be an advisor. But I want to be their friend, but here's what I know. Even in family, friendships need fences to flourish. The problem with Thidwick is not that he was good-hearted. In fact, being good-hearted is biblical and good godly advice. Look at Proverbs chapter 11 on the screen. This is just great advice. One man gives freely, yet gains even more. Another withholds unduly, but comes to poverty. A generous man will prosper. He who refreshes others will himself be refreshed. I put that in front of my kids, and I say, this is valuable. You know your dad lives this. I believe this. It's good advice. That is not the reason. Some people read this book of Thidwick, and they think, you know why the whole thing broke down? Because he was good-hearted. You shouldn't be generous with people. That's not the problem. It broke down for lack of fences, for lack of boundaries. Let me be very specific. It broke down because relationships need clear boundaries, clear fences to be built and honored and respected. In other words, relationships to thrive need more than one conversation. You need ongoing conversation, ongoing conversation, ongoing conversation. And if you don't have it, it will lead to a descent into missed expectations, dysfunction, taking advantage, and false community, pseudo community. What was going on in this story is that the Bengal bug had one conversation with Thidwick and said, can I sit in your horns for a while on easy seat? And he said, yes. Everything else that happened in the rest of the book was assumption without conversation. Write that down. I'm telling you, that right there, that right there is underneath most of what's breaking down in relationship, assumption without conversation. Assumption without conversation. When you start living out of assumption and you didn't have the conversation, it starts leading to undercurrent and resentment. Because you start assuming things how they should be, and the other one does, and they don't align, and it starts building an undercurrent, and you start seeing them different, they see you different. Pretty soon, you're in a rat's nest of a relationship of resentment. You have no idea that's because you didn't have any conversations. So in our family of my 27-year-old son with his married wife, Christina, they've been married 5 years. My daughter, Julissa, who's 26, been married to her husband for 3 years, and my 21-year-old college student, Jake, we have uncomfortable conversations. What kind of conversations? Uncomfortable. We have to go have we have to have ongoing conversations, because listen, everybody wants healthy grown-up relationships. Everybody wants healthy grown-up friendships, but they do not come easily. You don't get those easily. Kind of remind me of the of the little boy who was trying to get the cookie he couldn't get easily. It's only 20 seconds. Check it out.
Remember when Dad threw his flip-flops down at the beach stand on the boardwalk? Oh.
No.
His blue and black ones. We have pictures of it somewhere.
What?
Okay, back before people wore flip-flops.
Is this before or after the stabbing? Which one was this?
You giving up, bud?
Do you hear the mom in the last moment? You giving up, bud? Is that not one of the most adorable little things? He can't get the cookie. And so he finally gave up. You know what? There's a lot of things in the way of getting the relationship you long for, and you can't just give up. You got to go have the uncomfortable conversations and literally draw the fence lines and into adult and adult relationships. Honor the fence lines. Don't cross over them. Don't break the fence. Respect one another. Our family practices this aggressively. In fact, I'll give you some examples. I don't know if it's helpful, but I'll give you some family fence lines we've drawn. They're not right, wrong, and I'm just telling you what we do. Here's the first one. Because our family got together with the couples, and we spent 2 or 3 hours talking in preparation for this, and man, I wish I could bring you all the hours of stuff. It might be helpful, but here's a couple of them, right? Here's one of them. You are not fully family till you marry, but when you marry, you are fully family. What does that mean? When Julissa was dating her to-be husband, Kevin, when they were just dating, we did not consider him family. We weren't anti-Kevin. Well, I was a little. But it wasn't anti-Kevin. He just wasn't family until family. And you know what that means? We had that conversation ahead of time. Now, what that meant is you don't go on family vacations with us. So you might be dating my daughter, but I'm not taking you on family vacation. I'm not paying for your vacation. I'm taking you on family. And that messed him up, because in his family, if you date somebody, they are on family vacation. Well, you see how that would have created resentment? So he like comes into our family, and we're going on family vacation. And we had the conversation ahead of time. And we recognize his family custom and our family custom are different. So if you have the conversation ahead of time, you avoid undercurrent and resentment. And we talk. I'm not saying it's right or wrong. It's just different. You better know what you're doing. That was a family fence line for us. Now, as soon as you're in the family, though, your family, he is my son. He matters to me. I embrace him like my daughter. Here, let me give you a second one. We, mom and dad, Marcia and I, we are both for you, not just for one of you. That's a fence. That's a line we draw. I mean, Josh is my son. Christina is the girl he married. Christina's my daughter now. I am not just for Josh because he is my biological son. I figured this out when I was married. We were second year into marriage. Marsha and I had a rough first 5 years of marriage. It was bad. And I'm like, why did I marry her? And I probably made a mistake. And everybody knew she made a mistake. So it was just difficult. And I remember in our second year of marriage, at one point specifically, we were so frustrated. I had another fight. It was just miserable. And I drove over to my mom's house at her duplex, and I just sat down. And I said, Mom, and I was whining about Marsha and complaining about Marsha, telling her all the bad stuff about Marsha. And I finally said, man, I mean, somebody needs to grow up. And she said, yes, you do, honey. And I'm like, no, I was talking about Marsha. Mom, Marsha needs to grow up. You're supposed to support me, not Marsha. I'm your son. She said, I know, son, but you're messed up. Came from a messed up family. We all messed up. You know what? You need to drive back home and grow up and apologize to your wife and fix this. See, my mom was for our marriage. I'm telling you, something is seriously, I think, seriously wrong when you're not for your kid's marriage. And you're just for one of them. So another fence line that we drew. Here's another one. We will only give advice when you ask. I spend my whole life telling my kids, shut up and listen. When they become adults, it's my turn. I have to shut up and listen. It's one of the most difficult things to do as a parent. We do not offer advice to our kids when they're adults, unless they ask for it. You have to ask for it. I'm not going to give it. Which means we pray a lot for our kids. Because I can see stuff coming. I'm like, oh. Ask me. Anything you want to talk about? Anything at all? And by the way, we only give advice if they need a marriage counselor. The answer is no. And I do marriage counseling for people. Not for my kids. I'll help you find one. Give you another one. We talk about expectations ahead of time. I've already said this. We talk about expectations ahead of time, which means this. We want no pretense. And that means if we didn't talk about it and we find out that we have crossed each other's fence line, we have a shared responsibility to go face-to-face and have the conversation. Listen to me here. Listen. If one family member is talking about another family member of something that broke down or something that offended or something that didn't work, we tell that person, you got to go back to that person face-to-face, one-on-one. Somebody needs to apologize. You need to mutually understand. You need to repair, forgive, restore the relationship, rebuild a new fence, and now we know how to go forward. But in this family, there's no pretense. No what? No pretense. I'm telling you, pretense kills relationships. This is incredibly hard to do. And when you come talk to somebody and there's tension in the relationship, because listen, our family has all kinds of conflict, just no undercurrent. Whoo, did you get that? Filled with conflicts, just no undercurrent. Because when there's conflict, you got to handle it, kind of like Proverbs 15:1 says. I love this verse. Need to master it. A gentle answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. And by the way, let me just say this. I know that many of you as parents are navigating adult relationships with your adult children who are what Scripture calls prodigals. It means they're not walking in your family values or biblical values, and that's challenging. And we walk alongside you as parents and pray with you, and I know it's difficult. And if we could add one more teaching to this series, it would be for prodigals. And so we chose to do that. It's kind of a bonus. We've never done this before, but I asked Pastor Sean to teach it. You can go right online and listen to it today or anytime you want this week, and that might be of some value to you. Let me just give you one final thought. We'll be done. One of the fences we build is the freedom to be your own personality. We do not squeeze our kids into our mold. Marsha and I have our own unique personality as a couple, and so do our kids. Josh and Christina, they have a unique personality. They are our more introverted couple. They are laid back, easygoing. If they were an amusement ride, they would be like those Sky Cable rides that are just slow, steady, riding over all the chaos. I mean, they don't get to conversations quick. They'll eventually get to it. There's no drama, just... Then I have Kevin and Julissa. Think opposite. Their personality as a couple is more extrovert. and verbal. If they were an amusement ride, they are an extreme roller coaster. Up, down, left, right. Are you kidding me? All kinds of fun. In fact, they picked their song. I said, what song would you pick as a couple? What would be your couple song? They said, Katy Perry's clean version of Hot and Cold. Here's just a quick 20 seconds, and you'll know what I mean. It's a roller coaster. You know what? As parents of adult kids, we say, you know what? We love you all. We love you equally. We value you fully. We want to be your friend. We want to be your advisor. And we're going to respect your uniqueness and your difference. You don't have to be like us, but we hope you'll be like God. I love being a parent of grown-up kids. I want to help them become all God wants them to be, but we're going to do it as grown-ups. And I respect the fence lines. I don't want the life I had with my dad. We were done at 18. I like helping my kids. But I do it on different terms. So as I turn the service over to the campus pastors, what's needed for your growing up family? What can you learn from Solomon and Seuss? And while you seek to be good-hearted, what easy seat do you need to avoid? Or what fences do you need to talk about and honor?